This episode is brought to you in part by Wholehearted Love, a new book by Caleb and Stephanie Rouse. Overcome the barriers that hold you back in your relationships with God and with others, and delight in feeling safe, seen, and loved with Wholehearted Love. For more information, go to Tyndale.com.
You're listening to episode 181.
I'm sorry, but...
of the In-Between podcast, where you'll discover the tools to build a marriage and family that you love. My name is Daniel Lim.
And I'm Christina M. Well, in a perfect world, there would be no need for apologies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone would just get along. There would be no arguing, no fighting, no hurt feelings or mistakes or misunderstandings.
Wait, are you describing our household? Our marriage?
Yes, exactly. But, as you know, we all, including us, live in a far from perfect world, and thus apologies are necessary.
Yes, and frequent in our household.
Maybe too frequent.
Yeah.
Well, the need for apologies spans all human relationships. Whether you're married, your parents, you're dating, or you're working, relationships of all kinds require apologies. Without apologies, anger builds and pushes us to demand justice. While justice may bring some sense of satisfaction to the offended person, justice doesn't typically restore relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's forgiveness and reconciliation that do.
Yeah, you're right.
The desire for reconciliation is often more potent than the desire for justice. Gary Chapman, the author of The Five Languages of Apology, which is the book this episode is based on, says, "The more intimate the relationship, the deeper the desire for reconciliation."
Huh. Can you say that again?
The more intimate the relationship, the deeper the desire for reconciliation.
Wow.
Yeah, just think back to when you've been really hurt by your spouse. In your hurt and anger, you are probably pulled in two directions, right?
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, longing for justice, and on the other, a desire to show your spouse mercy. You may wish for reconciliation, and it is in your spouse's sincere apology that genuine reconciliation is possible. But what if there is no apology? Well, that probably pushes you to demand justice, right?
Mm-hmm.
To ensure things are made right and fair. Or maybe even, I want you to hurt as badly as you have hurt me.
Yeah, you've nailed it right on the head, Christina. As we'll see in today's episode, genuine forgiveness and reconciliation are a two-person transaction that's enabled by apologies. So if you're like us, you may really suck at apologies or think you're fine at apologizing, but wonder why the offended party never seems to accept your apology. Well, in her book, Why Won't You Apologize? Harriet Lerner describes three ways to ruin an apology. Both Christina and I have quickly realized that we have done all these three,
mm-hmm.
and we have also been the recipient of all these three failed apology attempts. Okay, are you ready to hear what they are? Number one, including the word but. So this is like, hey, Christina, I'm sorry that I lost my temper and called you all those horrible names, but you were late. You were late, which made me late, and I can't stand being late. Doesn't sound like much of an apology when you add that word, but, right?
Not at all.
So that's the first failed apology attempt, including the word but. The second one is saying, I'm sorry you feel that way.
I hate that one.
Like, I'm so sorry that you feel that way. My meeting ran late. I couldn't control that, but at least I'm here now. So I'm sorry you felt the way you did. Yeah, that's not a true apology. Mm-hmm. And the third failed apology attempt is including the word if. Like, I'm sorry if my comment offended you. It's not a true apology,
no,
is it?
Fake apologies.
Yeah, that's right. But why are we so good at them? Don't they make you so livid when you receive an apology like one of those ones?
Yeah.
Well, that's why on today's episode, we want to help you learn how to apologize. For when we apologize, this is when we accept responsibility for our behavior, seeking to make amends with the person who has offended. Genuine apology opens the door to the possibility of what we really want deep down inside, forgiveness and reconciliation. And then that's when we can continue to build a relationship, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, exactly. But before we unpack the five fundamental aspects of an apology, it's important for us to underline the fact that forgiveness does not automatically mean trusting the other person. Okay, let me say that again. Forgiveness and trust are not to be equated. Because forgiveness is a decision. It can be extended immediately when one person perceives that they have had or heard a sincere apology. However, trust is not a decision. It is rather an emotion. Trust is that gut level of confidence that you will do what you say you will do. Trust does have a cognitive aspect to it, too, like, I choose to believe that you are a person of integrity. That statement is based on trust. However, this statement is rooted in the soil of emotions. Dr. Gary Chapman says, trust is that emotional sense that I can relax with you and don't have to be suspicious. Mm. I can let down my emotional guard because you will not knowingly hurt me. Now, in most relationships, trust develops in the early stages of the relationship. Unless we have been deeply hurt in the past, we tend to assume that people are who they claim to be. If in the early months of their relationship we find no occasion to doubt that, then our initial trust is affirmed and deepened.
Yeah. So trust then, when you think about it, is your normal emotional state in healthy relationships, right? In healthy relationships. Then just think about it. Friends trust each other. Spouses trust each other. But when trust is violated or betrayed, I'm sure you've experienced that it does not spring back immediately, even after the person who broke that trust extends an apology and there's forgiveness. Trust is diminished in that relationship because the person proved to be untrustworthy. So if you find yourself hurt in a relationship, you might find yourself saying in those moments, hey, I forgive you, but I don't trust you as deeply as I did before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the illustration that Dr. Chapman uses. He refers to trust as being like a tender new plant. When trust is violated, it is like someone stepped on that plant and pushed it into the mud and soil. The rain and the sun may eventually enable the plant to grow upright again, but that's not going to happen overnight, right? Mm,
yeah.
So how do we rebuild trust in a relationship when it has been violated? The answer is by being trustworthy one day at a time. A sincere apology and genuine forgiveness open the door to the possibility of trust growing again. So for example, when working with couples where there has been an infidelity, the first step of repairing the relationship is what Dr. Gottman calls atonement. It is literally the stage where the offending partner answers all of the questions of the other spouse and gives full access to their spouse about where they've been spending their time, places they've gone, where they're communicating, like on their cell phone, on their laptop. So even allowing their spouse full access to their phone history, computer history, answering questions about where you were at a certain time of day. Even giving your spouse permission to make phone calls to affirm that you are where you said you would be. Now, that may sound harsh to some, like, I said I was sorry and it's been a year, but my spouse still doesn't trust me. Well, trust is not fostered by secretiveness, but by openness, mm-hmm. by being open with one another. Yeah. If you choose to be trustworthy over a period of time, your spouse will likely come to trust you again. It just may take longer than you were expecting. If you continue to be untrustworthy by lying, cheating, hiding, and making excuses, well, y'all, trust will never be restored. Trust's only hope of survival is the rain and sunshine of integrity.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that importance, Christina, about forgiving and trusting. In a later episode, we're actually going to be talking to a couple who chose to work on their marriage, learning to forgive and to trust each other again through an infidelity in their marriage. We hope it'll continue to help deepen your understanding and practice of forgiving and learning to rebuild trust. But that's in a future episode. Today, we are going to be unpacking the five fundamental aspects of an apology. Each of them are important, but for a particular individual, one or two of the languages may communicate more effectively than others. The key to a good relationship is learning the apology language of the other person and being willing to speak it. When you speak their primary language, you may make it easier for them to genuinely forgive. But when you fail to speak their language, it'll probably make forgiveness more difficult because they're not really sure if you're genuinely apologizing. So for the rest of the episode, we'd like to explain each of the five apology languages and then discuss how you can discover both your own and your spouse's primary apology language. So let's start with apology language number one, which is expressing regret. So most commonly, it's expressed in the words, "I am sorry." Expressing regret is the emotional aspect of an apology. It's expressing to the offended person your own sense of guilt, shame, and pain that your behavior has hurt them deeply. Expressing regret is fundamental to good relationships. Regret focuses on what you did or failed to do and how it affected the other person. The hurt one is experiencing painful emotions, and they want you to feel some of their pain. They want some evidence that you realize how deeply you've hurt them. So for some people, this is the one thing that they listen for in an apology, that you are feeling regret. Without this, they may not sense that the apology was sincere. Just a simple, "Oh, I'm sorry," without regret, or even, I mean, you could probably imagine if someone's done something that has deeply hurt you and they're like, "Oh, I'm sorry," and that's all they say, probably the reason you're feeling upset or you don't feel like that's an apology is because there's no regret in that. So an apology has more impact when it's specific, like, "I'm sorry for," so that the offended party knows that you know what you did, that you are feeling regret, and that this, when you do that, communicates that we truly understand how much we have hurt them. For Christina and I, we have taught our kids to be specific about what they're apologizing for. So maybe it's an important language for us, right?
Yeah, right. And for us and many others, the apology language of expressing regret is extremely important in the process of healing and restoration. If you want these people to sense your sincerity, then you need to learn to speak the language of regret, which focuses on their pain and your behavior and how the two are related. It's communicating to them that you feel hurt because your actions have hurt them. It is this identification with their pain that can spark their willingness to forgive you. If you are willing to express regret, but you're not quite sure how to do it because it's a new language for you, a few statements that may help you get started are, "I know that I have hurt you deeply. That causes me immense pain. I am truly sorry for what I did." Or, "Oh, I'm sorry that I broke your trust. I've created a roadblock in our relationship that I want to move. I understand that even after I apologize, it may take a while for you to trust me again. I'm sorry that I have caused you so much pain."
The wait is over. Find out what happens in the thrilling conclusion of the 12th Dead Sea Squirrels book, Babylon Breakout. Hi, I'm Mike Naraki, co-creator of VeggieTales, voice of Larry the Cucumber, and author of The Dead Sea Squirrels. Get ready for more daring rescues and hilarious jokes as Merle and Pearl and their animal friends embark on a ridiculous mission to bust the kidnapped Gomez family out of Babylon, a Bible-themed amusement park with talking animals. Young readers will love the nutty misadventures of 10-year-old Michael and his friends, and will learn all about biblical life lessons, such as forgiveness and friendship. Read all 12 Dead Sea Squirrels books, available wherever books are sold.
Yeah, even in the way that you said that, right, you can sense the regret. And maybe you might be more head-minded over heart-minded, and you may not be able to have the words, or you have a hard time finding the words to express that regret when you know in your head that you have hurt them. So even just the way that you did that, the pausing, the sighing, all that are ways that we can express that, yeah, that we are actually sorry.
Completely. Yeah. So it's the nonverbal and the verbal that are coming together to really show that you truly genuinely regret what you've done.
Yeah. Complete. You're not checking your watch. You're not holding your phone. It's all down and you're looking at them in the eyes.
Yeah. 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 And this is really easy to point out when a person doesn't.
Yeah, you're right.
doesn't actually regret. So don't come to your spouse being like, nah, I know your language of apology is this. So yeah, I'm sorry and whatever. Like, I'm sorry, I regret it.
Yeah.
Like, really? Yeah, you do
can't you? You can't just say the word regret. Yeah. You have to actually regret it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So okay. That may take some time to reflect on what you have done.
Yeah. So that's the first apology language, expressing regret. The second one is accepting responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we feel like we are justified in our actions, right? So we don't actually need to apologize. Oh, I feel that one. I'm like, what? It was your fault. It wasn't mine. The other person should just understand that we aren't in the best mood or going through a hard time, right? I struggle with this one, especially when I'm PMSing. I feel like Daniel should just understand that it's the hormones that are making me a little more agitated and that he should know to walk on eggshells around me for a few days. But in reality, that is just an excuse that covers the need to apologize and it can fracture the relationship.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He agrees.
No, I mean, I grew up with three older sisters and we have three ladies in the house.
We do.
No, but yeah, you're right. Like, I think there's a sense of being aware.
Uh-huh.
But I think part of it is things can be heightened.
Yes, very right? True. Yeah, but we still are responsible for what we say, what we do, how we react, and self-regulation. So it's not an excuse to just let yourself fly off the handle.
Yeah, or for me, if I come home after a really stressful day, I can't take that out on Christina or the kids or expect them to be more
accommodating.
Yeah, more accommodating if I have a short temper, right? I still need to be responsible for my actions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things like accommodating, yes, in the sense where if you can say, hey, like express, I've had a really tough day. And you can ask, I just need maybe about 10 minutes to myself before all of these questions, before all these demands come. Can you give me 10 minutes? And then we can be accommodating that way versus you come in like, you know, guns a-blazing yelling at us for not picking up our toys or trash or whatnot. Then it's like, whoa, what is happening?
Yeah.
So how about this one? Maybe you're like, yeah, I'm not like that. But maybe this one kind of rings a bell for you. I'm sorry, but it's not my fault.
It's so funny.
That's the one we hear a lot from our kids to each other. Yeah, I'm sorry, but you made me do it. Yeah, it's a fake apology because we admit that what we did or said was not the best, like, I'm sorry, but our behavior was provoked by the other person's irresponsibility. That's the, like, it's not my fault. It's because you did this. Thus, we blame others and find it difficult to confess that we were wrong. At the heart of accepting responsibility for one's behavior is the willingness to actually admit I was wrong.
Yeah, believe and admit, right? Not just verbally say, oh, I was wrong. So for many individuals, hearing the apology language of accepting responsibility for one's wrong behavior, I know that sounds like a mouthful, but for many, that is, if that's your apology language, that's the most important part of it, right? Hearing the other person accept responsibility for their wrong behavior. It's what convinces these individuals that the apology is sincere, just like for the first apology language. Hearing the other person feel and express regret. Well, for this one, it's hearing them accept responsibility for their wrong behavior. So sorry, just saying sorry is not enough. They want to know that you understand what you did was wrong. So for these individuals, if you want them to sense the sincerity of your apology, if you are living with or you are friends with someone who has this apology language, then you might want to use statements like these ones. I know that what I did was wrong. I could try to excuse myself, but there's no excuse. What I did was selfish and wrong. And maybe in your mind, you're like, yeah, but you sort of caused me to do that. And I mean, honestly, in any fight, it's never 100% one person's fault. Mm-hmm. There's always a back and forth, but perhaps this is what gets things started. Right? Not minimizing your apology by saying, but you did this first, and then I'll accept my stuff if you accept yours, right? That doesn't, it kind of waters it all down.
Mm-hmm.
Or how about this one? The way I spoke to you is wrong. It was harsh and untrue. I spoke out of anger, trying to justify myself. The way I talk to you is unkind and unloving, and I hope you will forgive me.
Whoa, if you came to me and said that, I'd be like, okay, I totally forgive you.
Okay, but before we go to the third apology language, what if you are truly accepting that you did that, but in your mind, you know the other person did the same thing, and they were also speaking out of anger, and what they said was kind and unkind and unloving, and what you're doing here is you're accepting your part of it. What if your spouse then says, wow, yes, you were angry and unloving. Yeah, I definitely forgive you. Do you want to go out for dinner now? And they don't take any response. They don't accept responsibility. How do you respond in those situations?
Well, I think if we're asking for forgiveness just because we want our spouse
you gotta question. Yeah. Are you truly accepting responsibility?
Completely. Yeah. Because that's what forgiveness. Forgiveness is you're offering it. The person doesn't have to accept it, but they can, but it doesn't come with strings attached.
Yeah.
Right? That's good. So I know that's hard. It is really hard.
Yeah.
And there's so many reasons why that your spouse or the other person may not be ready to admit that they're wrong. Maybe they haven't seen it. Maybe there's lots in their history and their narratives that apologizing means that you're weak or that you have to take full responsibility, so on and so forth. So there's a lot to unpack there, which we won't have time today. But if anything, come away with, hey, I am asking for forgiveness for what I have done. I'm not trying to throw out breadcrumbs for you to pick up, meaning like I actually want you to apologize to me.
Yeah. So the third apology language is making restitution. The New Webster's Dictionary defines restitution as the act of giving back to a rightful owner or a giving of something as an equivalent for what has been lost or damaged and the like. A leading researcher on forgiveness, Professor Worthington, calls the act of making such amends equalizing. He says equalizing is making up for the loss that the other person experienced. To offer restitution is to equalize the balance of justice. Any hurt or offense causes the person who is hurt to lose something. Perhaps they lose their self-esteem, self-respect, or a tangible benefit. So it is an act of kindness for the transgressor to make up for the loss.
Mm-hmm. For some people, restitution is their primary apology language. For them, the statement, "It is not right for me to have treated you that way," must be followed with, "What can I do to show you that I still care about you?" Without this effort at restitution, this person will question the sincerity of the apology, even if you said, "I'm sorry." They will continue to question the sincerity of your apology and perhaps even feel unloved, even though you may have said, "Hey, I'm sorry, I was wrong." They are waiting for the tangible reassurance that you genuinely love them through your act of restitution.
Yeah.
Now, there's a fascinating story recorded in the life of Jesus that illustrates restitution. Jesus was passing through the town of Jericho where he met a tax collector named Zacchaeus. Now, if you're not familiar with the Bible, tax collectors in that day were not the most popular people among the ordinary Jewish people because they often charged crazy amounts of tax so that they could give what was owed to the Roman bosses, but then they could sneakily pocket the rest. It was a lucrative job making money off the backs of hard-working people. Well, being a short man, Zacchaeus climbs into a tree to be able to hear what Jesus is saying. He thought he would go unnoticed, but during Jesus' talk, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, come down from there. I'd like to go to your house for dinner." As you can imagine how unpopular Zacchaeus is, being invited to spend time with someone would come as a shock. That may have been his very first invitation. He was deeply moved. As a result, Zacchaeus apologizes for his wrong behavior throughout the years, and then he says that he plans to repay all those from who he has unjustly taken from. In fact, he promises to repay them four times the amount that he had taken. Well, like Zacchaeus, a genuine apology will be accompanied by a desire to right the wrongs committed, to make amends for the damage done, and to assure the person that you truly care for them. If you're not certain what the offended person might consider proper restitution, you might ask the following questions to them. Is there anything I can do to make up for what I have done? Or, I know I have hurt you deeply, and I feel like I should do something to repay you for the hurt I've caused. Can you give me a suggestion?
What a beautiful example and story of making restitution. As you were sharing the story of Zacchaeus, the song was going
Zacchaeus
through my
head. Was a wee little man,
a wee little man was he. Yep. Like literally, I was like, oh yeah, say it, come down.
He climbed up in a sycamore tree, the Lord he wanted to see.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so that's a great example of making restitution as an apology language. The fourth one is planned change. This apology language emphasizes the sincere commitment to change and the genuine intention not to repeat the hurtful behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the hurtful behavior might be repeated again, but there's this genuine intention, this plan for change. So planning out specific change is more than just saying, hey, I'm sorry, I was wrong, how can I make this up to you? Rather, it's saying, I am going to try my hardest not to do this again. Now, for some people, it's a genuine plan for change. That's the thing that convinces the other person that the apology is sincere. Because for them, without laying out specific steps on how you're going to prevent a reoccurrence, the other language's apology may just fall on deaf ears. What people with this apology language have, what they want to hear, is they want to know, are you going to take real steps toward change? Or will this happen again next week?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we speak this language of change? Well, it begins with an expression of intent to prevent this, to prevent another happening of this transgression, right? All true change begins in the heart. We know that. And so when we recognize that what we have done is wrong, that our actions have hurt the one that we love, that is where things begin. We don't want to continue this behavior, so we decide that we are going to change, that we will change. Then we can verbalize this decision to the person that we've offended. Now, we're not minimizing our behavior, but we're accepting full responsibility for our actions. When we share our intention to change with the person that we've offended, what's happening is we're communicating to them what's going on inside of us. They get a glimpse of our heart. And for people with this apology language, this often convinces them that we really do mean what we say. So understanding and respecting this apology language can be crucial in rebuilding trust, in repairing relationships. It involves a deeper level of personal growth and a commitment to create the sort of positive change that is going to benefit both parties involved.
Mm-hmm. You know, this apology language, what you were explaining, Daniel, reminds me of that ongoing tiff we used to have where I would ask you to just text me or call me when you're running late. Mm. This was when the kids were younger and we were like counting down the minutes until daddy got home.
Yeah.
But you were taking the bus. We only had one car. And so sometimes the bus was late or sometimes you left late to work. And so you missed the first bus. And in your huffle kerfuffle, sometimes you would forget or you were still in your head from a meeting and you would forget to call or forget to text. And so I would have dinner hot and piping ready for you at 5:30 and it'd be 5:35. 5:40, 5:45, 5:50, 6 o'clock. I'm like, where are you?
Yeah, and this is like pre-iPhone, pre-find my phone.
Exactly.
Now
so,
you just check where I am.
Yeah, exactly. Well, then we just, as the kids say, you're stalking daddy again. Yeah. But, and then my mind would go, oh my goodness, what if the bus broke down? Or what if he fell and broke his leg? Like all of this stuff. And so by the time he would come home, I would be so riled up and then I would be angry and I would feel like dinner's cold, all of this kind of snowball effect. And so I think I probably told you 3 or 4 times and you're like, oh, I'm sorry. I just forgot. And then I'm like, don't say sorry. Like, I don't care that you're sorry anymore because I feel like you're lying to me. Mm. You're not changing your behavior. You're just saying sorry. And so you did put a plan in place. You said, okay, if I know that I'm going to be 5 or more minutes late from 5:30, I will make sure to call you. And you were true to your word.
And thank the Lord for finding my phone now.
Yes.
Scratch, scratch. Yes. Okay. All right. Let's go to the fifth language of apology, which is requesting forgiveness. So this apology language involves the explicit act of asking for forgiveness. Now picture this. Your spouse forgets to take out the trash can in the morning before they leave, which isn't such a big deal, except that you've agreed that it's their job to do that, which means that you have to do it now. And that extra minute pulling out that trash can feels like it then snowballs your entire morning, and now you're running late and the kids are late to school and all that stuff. So your spouse sees their notification on their phone from your outdoor camera and sees that there is movement. Your spouse then sees you dragging the trash can out and then calls you. Instead of beating around the bush about why they didn't take out the trash, they directly ask, "Hey, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me?" This is a vulnerable and direct approach, which if you have this apology language, you're going to find very meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Thinking of all the ways we can stalk our like spouse now. Find my phone, the Ring outdoor camera.
Yeah, I was like, are you talking about us, Christian?
Maybe.
Do we need to talk after this podcast episode?
No, actually, I was thinking of how many times you actually, because we have not agreed that it's your job or whatever, whoever's out there first will do it. But so many times I'm like, oh, thank you for taking in the trash. Like, it just means so much to me. So I was like, reverse. Like, what if you didn't? Maybe I would feel like this. Well, why would requesting forgiveness feel so important? Maybe for me too, but to some, it indicates that you want to see the relationship fully restored. When an offense occurs, immediately it creates an emotional barrier between two people. Until that barrier is removed, the relationship, well, it just can't go forward. An apology is an attempt to remove that barrier. If you discover that the person's primary apology language is requesting forgiveness, then this is actually the surest way to remove that barrier.
Mm-hmm.
It also shows that you realize you have done something wrong, that you have offended the other person intentionally or unintentionally. Asking for forgiveness is an admission of guilt. It shows that you know that you deserve punishment, but are also hoping for grace. Lastly, requesting forgiveness shows that you are willing to put the future of the relationship in the hands of the offended person.
Wow.
You have admitted you are wrong. You have expressed regret. You have offered to make amends. But now you are saying, will you forgive me? You know that you cannot answer that question for that person. It's their choice. It's the offended party's choice that they must make. This apology language involves vulnerability. By asking for forgiveness, the apologizer openly admits their fault and expresses a genuine desire for a reconciliation. It's a direct and honest way of seeking closure after a conflict.
Yeah. Now, please understand that when you request to be forgiven, it's a request. It's a huge request. It's going to be costly to the person that you've offended. When they forgive you, you also need to remember that they must give up their desire for justice in the forgiveness. They have to relinquish their hurt, their anger, their feeling of embarrassment, shame, or humiliation. They have to give up their feelings of rejection, betrayal, and sometimes they must live with the consequences of your wrong behavior. So because of the costliness of forgiveness, and I hope you're sensing that, don't expect the offended person to forgive you immediately. It takes time to observe whether you are going to follow up and follow through on making restitution or changing your behaviors. The person must be convinced of your sincerity, and that likely will take some time. But in the meantime, your greatest virtue must be patience.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we ended on that note, Daniel, because it's true that when you do forgive someone, that they are laying down arms too.
Yeah, they are.
So there you have it. Those are the five apology languages. We wanted to go through those first because now we want to transition into helping you find your primary apology language. How do we do that, Daniel?
Well, these five languages, one of them, will likely speak more deeply to you and more sincerely than the other four, and perhaps one of them did, right? One of them were like, yeah, 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 right? When you're, that's what you're thinking.
Have you heard and seen?
Yeah. And while you may appreciate hearing all the five languages, if you don't hear yours from the person that has offended you, then you're going to question the sincerity of their apology. Now, on the other hand, if the apology is expressed in your primary language, then you're probably going to find it a lot easier to forgive the offender. And as you reflect back on all the times that relationships have been broken or hurt and you've had to forgive one another, perhaps you can recognize, hey, it was really easy then, but it was not then. And why have I not forgiven that person, but I've forgiven this person? It might have to do with your primary apology language and how the other person apologized. So discovering your primary apology language and the primary language of the significant people in your life is essential. This is going to enhance your ability to both give and receive effective apologies. Dr. Chapman discovered that 75% of the couples he surveyed differed in their primary apology language.
Oh, wow.
And of those, 15% had completely opposite language preferences, where one spouse's primary language was the other spouse's last choice.
Oh, no way. That's fascinating. Well, here's a few questions to help you and your spouse identify your own language of apology. Don't worry, we are going to include these in our show notes, so don't feel like you need to rush and try to find a pen and paper. You can just go to inbetween.org/episode181, and we have the full show notes there, including these questions. Okay, so if the first question is, what do I expect the other person to do or say? Ask yourself the question, what do I expect the person to say or do that would make it possible for me to genuinely forgive them? You may find that your answer will involve several apology languages, and that's okay. Actually, it's pretty common that two or three of the apology languages will be important to you. But as you're going through these, typically one stands out above the others.
Yeah. The second question is, what hurts most deeply about this situation? So a second way to discover your primary apology language is to answer the question, what hurts me most deeply about this situation? This question is especially helpful if the offender has not yet apologized at all or has not apologized to your satisfaction.
Yes. And the third question to ask yourself is, what language is most important when I apologize? Another question to ask is, when I apologize to others, which of the five languages do I think is the most important? Mm-hmm. This question is based on the assumption that the apology language you speak to others is probably the language that you would like to receive the most.
Yeah. So there you have it. A breakdown of the five apology languages and some questions to help you and your spouse identify your own language of apology. These would also make some amazing date night questions, so we want to encourage you to go to inbetween.org/episode181 to find them. Knowing how to apologize well is one of the keys to successful relationships. It's not about accepting the blame for something, but instead it's about acknowledging and responding to your spouse's emotional pain. Relationships are a tender dance that can have many stepping on the toes sorts of moments from both dance partners. But by knowing how to apologize well, these stepping on the toes moments can go from hurting each other to learning to work together to then repairing your emotional connection. So we'd be honored if you'd share this episode with your spouse or with a friend, someone that came to mind, inbetween.org/episode181. You can send them that link or hit the share button on your favorite podcasting app. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll catch you next time.
This episode was brought to you in part by the Compelled Podcast, which uses gripping, immersive storytelling to bring Christian testimonies to life. Listen to missionaries, addicts, martyrs, and more who have seen Jesus at work in unbelievable ways. Listen on your podcast app or compelledpodcast.com.